I turned to my father and asked how such lovely figures came to be in my room, and why they were represented with wings, since I had been told that angels had not really wings growing from their bodies at all. "Lovely figures are the gift of your mother and myself to you, and we would fain think of you as reposing under the shadow of their wings, which represent in a material form the protection we would ever give you. They are shown with wings because that is the symbol of the angelic spheres, but if you will look closely at them you will find that these wings are like a part of the drapery of the forms, and are not attached to the bodies at all as though they grew from the shoulder in the fashion earthly artists represent them. Wings, moreover, express the power of angelic beings to soar upon these outstretched pinions into heaven itself. The shining helmet and the sword represent war, the helmet the war of the intellect against terror, darkness and oppression. War man must ever wage against the passions of his lower nature. The crown symbolizes the glory of virtue and self-conquest. Harp in the woman's hand shows that she is an angel of the musical sphere, and the crown of lilies expresses purity and love. Her hand resting on the man's shoulder is to show that she derives her strength and power from him and from his stronger nature, while her attitude and looks as she bends over your couch express the tender love and protection of woman's maternal nature. As in you the masculine elements are stronger than the feminine patience of the angels of men's souls, they are made of equal size and stature, because in those characters the masculine and feminine elements are both equal, both evenly balanced, but with you it is not so, therefore are they represented with the woman dependent upon the stronger one. The male angel typifies power and protection, purity and love. Ever they show the eternal dual nature of the soul and that one half is not complete without the other. They also are the symbolical representation of the twin guardian angels of your soul, whose wings may be said in a spiritual sense to be ever outstretched in protection over you. And I confess that even in that beautiful home there were times when I felt lonely, and by myself, but as yet I had no one to share it with me, and I have always felt a pleasure to be doubly sweet when there was someone whom I could feel enjoyed it also. Companion of all others for whom I sighed was still on earth, and alas, as could she join me? And faithful friend was in a circle of the sphere above me in a home of his own, and as for Hassan, he was far above us both, so that though I saw them at times as well as my dear father and mother, there was no one to share my life with me and bon camarade, no one to watch for my homecoming, and no one for whom in my turn I could watch. Often on earth, often with my darling, but I found that with my advanced position in the spirit world I could not remain for so long at a time as I had been wont to do. On my spirit much the effect of trying to live in a foggy atmosphere or down a coal mine, and I had to return more frequently to the spirit land to recover myself. It in my lovely rooms and sigh to myself, ah, if I had but someone to speak with, some congenial soul to whom I might express all the thoughts which crowd my mind. Therefore with the greatest pleasure that I received a visit from faithful friend, and heard the suggestion he had to make to me. "Come," said he, "on behalf of a friend who has just come to this circle of the sphere, but who has not yet earned for himself a home of his own and therefore desires to find one with some friend more richly endowed than himself. He has no relatives here and I thought that you might be glad of his companionship. Most truly, I would be delighted to share my home with your friend. He may be called your friend also." "Him is Bender, Bender," I cried in astonishment and delight. "Ah, then doubly welcome. Bring him here as soon as possible. It's at your door. He would not come with me till he was sure you would really be glad to welcome him." "No one could be more so," I said. "Bring him in." So in there he stood, looking very different from when I had last seen him in that awful city of the lower sphere, then so sad, weighed down, so oppressed, now so bright, his robes, like mine, of purest white, and though his face was still sad in expression yet there was peace, and there was hope in the eyes he raised to mine as I clasped his hand and embraced him as we of my southern land embrace those we love and honor. It was with much pleasure that we met, we who had both so sinned and so suffered, and we were henceforth to be as brothers, became no more solitary, for, when one of us returns from our labors, the other is there to greet him, to share the joy and the care, and to talk over the success or the failure. The spheres, how can I tell of the many friends who came to visit me in this bright home, of the cities I saw in that fair land, the lovely scenes I visited not? It would take years, and already my narrative has reached its limits. I shall only tell of one more vision that I had, because in it I was shown a new path wherein I was to labor, one in which I could apply to the aid of others the lessons I had learned in my wanderings. I was lying on the couch in my room and had awakened from a long slumber, watching, as I often did, those two most beautiful figures of my guardian angels, and seeing fresh beauties, fresh meanings in their faces and their attitudes every time I looked at them, when I became conscious that my eastern guide, Ahinsemen, in his far-off sphere was seeking to communicate with me. I therefore allowed myself to become perfectly passive and soon felt a great cloud of light of a dazzling white misty substance surrounding me. It seemed to shut out the walls of my room and everything from me, leaving my spirit envelope lying upon the couch, upwards and still upwards, as though the will of my powerful guide was summoning me to him, and I floated on and on with a sense of lightness which even as a spirit I had never felt before. I alighted upon the summit of the high mountain, from which I could behold the earth and its lower and higher spheres revolving below me. So saw that sphere which was my home, but it appeared to lie far below the height upon which I stood. Beside me was Ahinsemen, and as in a dream I heard his voice speaking to me and saying, "Behold, son of my adoption, the new path in which I would have you labor, earth and her attendant spheres, and see how important to her welfare is this work in which I would have you to take part. See now the value of the power you have gained in your journey to the kingdoms of hell, since it will enable you to become one of the great army who daily and hourly protect mortal men from the assaults of hell's inhabitants. Behold this panorama of the spheres and learn how you can assist in a work as mighty as the spheres themselves." To where he pointed, and I beheld the circling belt of the great earth plain, its magnetic currents like the ebb and flow of an ocean tide, bearing on their waves countless millions upon millions of spirits. I saw all those strange elemental astral forms, some grotesque, some hideous, some beautiful. Also the earth-bound spirits of men and women still tied by their gross pleasures or their sinful lives, many of them using the organisms of mortals to gratify their degraded cravings and kindred mysteries of the earth plane. And I likewise beheld sweeping up from the dark spheres below waves of dark and awful beings, 10 times more deadly unto man in their influence over him than those dark spirits of the earth planes crowd around man in cluster thickly near him, and where they gather they shut out the brightness of the spiritual sun whose rays shine down upon the earth continually. They shut out this light, with the dark mass of their own cruel evil thoughts, and where this cloud rested there came murder and robbery, and cruelty and lust, and every kind of oppression were in their train, and death and sorrow followed them. And had cast aside from him the restraints of his conscience and had given way to greed and selfishness, and pride and ambition, there did these dark beings gather, shutting out the light of truth with their dark bodies. And I saw many mortals who mourned for the dear ones they had loved and lost, weeping most bitter tears because they could see them no more. I mourned standing beside them, seeking with all their power to show that they still lived, still hovered near, and that death had not robbed of one loving thought, one tender wish, those whom death had left behind to mourn. See or hear them, and the poor sorrowing spirits could not go away to their bright spheres because while those they had left so mourned for them they were tied to the earth plane by the chains of their love, and the light of their spirit lamps grew dim and faded as they thus hung about the atmosphere of earth in helpless sorrow. And Ahinsemen said to me, "Is there no need here for the means of communication between these two, the living and the so-called dead, that the sorrowful ones on both sides may be comforted?" And, again, "Is there no need for communication that those other sinful selfish men may be told of the dark beings hovering around them who seek to drag their souls to hell?" And I beheld a glorious dazzling light as of a sun in splendor, shining as no mortal eye ever saw the sunshine on earth. And its rays dispelled the clouds of darkness and sorrow, and I heard a glorious strain of music from the celestial spheres, and I thought surely now man will hear this music and see this light and be comforted. By the false ideas they had gathered, and the dust and dross of earth clogged their spirits and made their eyes blind to the glorious light which shone for them in vain. Then I beheld other mortals whose spiritual sight was partly unveiled and whose ears were not quite deaf, and they spoke of the spirit world and its wondrous beauties and put them into the language of earth that expression environments would allow, and these mortals were termed geniuses, and their words and their music and their pictures all helped to raise men's souls nearer to the God who gave that soul, for all that is highest and purest and best comes from the inspiration of the spirit world. Yet with all this beauty of art and music and literature, with all these aspirations, with all the fervor of religious feeling, there was still no way opened by which men on earth could hold communion with the loved ones who had gone before them into that land which dwellers upon earth have called the land of shades, and from whose born, they thought, no traveller could return, a land that was all vague and misty to their thought. A higher, purer knowledge of truth could communicate with him directly. The ideas and the fallacies of ancient theories formulated in the days of the world's infancy continually mixed with the newer, more perfect sight which the spirit world sought to give, and clouded its clearness and refracted its rays so that they reached the minds of mortals broken and imperfect. Then I beheld that the walls of the material life were pierced with many doors, and at each door stood an angel to guard it, and from each door on earth even to the highest spheres I saw a great chain of spirits, each link being one stage higher than the one below it. And to mortals upon earth were given the keys of these doors that they might keep them open, and that between mortals and the spirit world there might be communication, and turned aside and suffered their doors to close. Their doors but partly open, and where only light and truth should have shone they suffered errors and darkness to creep in, and again the light from the spirit world was sullied and broken as it passed through these darkened doorways. Still more sad, as time passed on, the light ceased to shine at all and gave place to the thick impure rays from dark deceitful spirits from the lower sphere, and at last the angel would close that door to be opened no more on earth. Then I turned from this sad sight and beheld many new doors opened where mortals stood, whose hearts were pure and unselfish and unsullied by the desires of earth, and through these doors poured such a flood of light upon the earth that my eyes were dazzled, and I had to turn aside. Looked again, I saw these doorways thronged by spirits, beautiful, bright spirits, and others whose raiment was dark and their hearts sad because their lives had been sinful, but in whose souls there was a desire for good, and there were spirits who were fair and bright, but sorrowful, because they could speak no more with those whom they had left on earth. And I beheld the sorrowful and the sinful spirits alike comforted and helped by means of the communication with the earth. And in the hearts of many mortals there was joy, for death's dark curtain was drawn aside and there was news from those beyond the grave. The great armies of spirits from all the higher spheres, their raiment of purest white and their helmets of silver and gold glittering in the glorious spiritual light. The leaders who directed the others in their work, who are these? Are they ever mortal men? And answered me, these were not only mortal men, but they were many of the men of evil lives, who by reason thereof descended to those kingdoms of hell which you have seen, but who because of their great repentance and the many and great works of atonement which they have done, and the perfect conquest over their own lower natures which they have gained, are now the leaders in the armies of light, the strong warriors who protect men from the evils of those lower spheres or dark masses of spirits, like waves washing on a shore and flowing over portions of the earth, drawn thither by man's own evil desires and greedy selfishness. And then I would see them driven back by the armies of light spirits, for between these two there was a constant conflict, and the prize for which they contended was man's soul, and yet these two contending forces had no weapons but their wills. They fought not save with the repelling powers of their magnetism, which was so antagonistic that neither could long remain in close contact with the other. And door at which stood a mortal woman, and said, behold, the chain there is incomplete, it wants still one link between her and the spirit chain. Go down and form that link, and then will your strength protect her and make her strong. Then will you guard her from those dark spirits who hover near, and help her to keep open her door. Your wanderings in those lower spheres have given you the power of repelling their inhabitants, and where stronger power is required it will be sent to protect her, and those who seek to communicate through her will do so only when you see fit. And when you desire to rest in the spirit world, another guide will take your place. And now look again at the earth and the conflict that surrounds it. Black thunder clouds hovering over the earth and gathering dark as night, and a sound as of a rushing storm swept upwards from the dark spheres of hell, and like the waves of a storm-tossed ocean these dark clouds of spirits rolled up against the sea of bright spirits, sweeping them back and rolling over the earth as though to blot out from it the light of truth, and they assailed each door of light and sought to overwhelm it. Then did this war in the spirit world become a war amongst men, nation fighting against nation for supremacy. Seemed as though in the great thirst for wealth and greed for conquest, all nations and all peoples must be engulfed, so universal was this war, and I looked to see were there none to aid, none who would come forth from the realms of light and wrest from the dark spirits their power over the earth. Seething mass of dark spirits were attacking those doors of light and striving to sweep away those poor faithful mortals who stood within them, that man might be driven back to the days of his ignorance again. Then it was that like a star in the east I saw a light, glittering and dazzling all by its brightness, and it came down and down, and grew till I saw it was a vast host of radiant angels from the heavenly spheres, and with their coming those other bright spirits whom I had seen driven back by the forces of evil gathered together again and joined those glorious warriors, and this great ocean of light, this mighty host of bright spirits swept down to earth and surrounded it with a great belt of glorious light. And I saw the rays of light, like spears, darting down and rending the dark mass in a thousand places. Fire flashed these dazzling rays and cut through the dark wall of spirits on all sides, scattering them to the four winds of heaven. Vainly did their leaders seek to gather their forces together again, vainly seek to drive them on. What was opposed to them, and they were hurled back by the brightness of these hosts of heaven till, like a dark and evil mist, they sank down, rolling back to those dark spheres from which they had come. Who are these bright angels? I asked again. These warriors who never drew back yet never slew, who held in check these mighty forces of evil, not with the sword of destruction but by the force of their mighty wills, by the eternal power of good over evil. Answer was, they are those who are also the redeemed ones of the darkest spheres, who long, long ages ago have washed their sin-stained garments in the pools of repentance, and have, by their own labors, risen from the ashes of their dead selves to higher things, not through a belief in the sacrifice of an innocent life for their sins, but by many years of earnest labors, many acts of atonement, by sorrow and by bitter tears, by many weary hours of striving to conquer first the evil in themselves, that they who have overcome may help others who sin to do so likewise. Angels of the heavenly spheres of earth, once men like themselves and able to sympathize with all the struggles of sinful men, a might host they are, ever strong to protect, powerful to save. My vision of the earth and its surroundings faded away, and in its stead I beheld one lone star shining above me with a pure silver light, and its ray fell like a thin thread of silver upon the earth and upon the spot where my beloved dwelt. Said to me, behold the star of her earthly destiny, how clear and pure it shines, and know, O, born upon earth there shines in the spiritual heavens such a star whose path is marked out when the soul is born, a path it must follow to the end, unless by an act of suicide it sever the thread of the earthly life, and by thus transgressing a law of nature plunge itself into great sorrow and suffering. Do you mean that the fate of every soul is fixed, and that we are but straws floating on the stream of our destiny? Quite the existence. And they are such events as those wise guardians of the angelic spheres deem to be calculated to develop and educate that soul. How these events will affect the life of each soul, whether they shall be the turning point for good or ill, for happiness or for sorrow, rests with the soul itself, and this is the prerogative of our free will, without which we would be but puppets, irresponsible for our acts and worthy of neither reward nor punishment for them. All the mortal follows the destined path with earnest endeavor to do right in all things, while the soul is pure and the thoughts unselfish, then does that star shine out with a clear unsullied ray, and light the pathway of the soul. If this star comes from the soul and is the reflection of its purity, then, the soul ceases to be pure. If it develops lower instead of its higher attributes, the star of that soul's destiny will grow pale and faint, the light flickering like some willow, the wisp hovering over a dark morass. No longer will it shine as a clear beacon of the soul, and at last, if the soul become very evil, the light of the star will die out and expire, to shine no more upon its earthly path. By watching these spiritual stars and tracing the path marked out for them in the spiritual heavens, that spirit seers are able to foretell the fate of each soul, and from the light given by the star to say whether the life of the soul is good or evil, and may the new field of your labors yield you the fairest fruits." He ceased speaking, and my soul seemed to sink down and down till I reached the spirit body I had left lying on my couch, and for a brief moment as I re-entered it I lost consciousness. Then I awoke to find myself in my own room, with those beautiful white angels hovering over me, symbols, as my father had said, of eternal protection and love. T4. Conclusion. My task is done, my story told, and it but remains for me to say to all who read it, that I trust they will believe it is as it professes to be, the true narrative of a repentant soul who has passed from darkness into light, and I would have them ask themselves if it might not be well to profit by the experiences of others and to weigh well the evidence for and against the possibility of the Spirit's return. Who would think the gospel of mercy after death to easier one, too lenient to the sinners? Do you know what it is to suffer all the pangs of an awakened conscience? Have you seen that path of bitter tears, of weary effort, which the soul must climb if it would return to God? Do you realize what it means to undo, step by step, through years of darkness and suffering and bitter anguish of soul, the sinful acts and words and thoughts of an earthly lifetime? For even to the uttermost farthing must the debt be paid. Each must drink to the last dregs the cup that he has filled. Can you imagine what it is to hover around the earth in helpless, hopeless impotence, beholding the bitter curse of your sins working their baneful effects upon the descendants you have left, with the taint of your past lurking in their blood and poisoning it? To know that each of these tainted lives, all these beings cursed with evil propensities ere they were born, have become a charge upon your conscience in so far as you have contributed to make them what they are, clogs which will continue to drag back your soul when it attempts to rise, until you shall have made due atonement to them, and helped to raise them from that slough into which your unbridled passions have contributed to sink them? Looking still about the earth who died hundreds of years ago, our spirit must feel who seeks from the grave to call aloud to others, and especially to those he has betrayed to their ruin as well as his own, and finds that all ears are deaf to his words, all hearts are closed to his cries of anguish and remorse. Do one foolish or revengeful act not avert one single consequence of suffering which he has brought upon others or himself? An awful wall has risen, a great gulf opened between him and the world of living men on earth, and unless some kind hand will bridge it over for him and help him to return and speak with those whom he has wronged, even the confession of his sorrow, even such tardy reparation as he may still make is denied to him. And is there, then, no need that those who have passed beyond the tomb should return and warn their brethren, even as Dives sought to return and could not? Are men on earth so good that they require no voice to echo to them from beyond the gates of death the foreshadowing of the fate awaiting them? Easier were it for man to repent now while still on earth than to wait till he goes to that land where he can deal with the things of earth no more, save through the organisms of others who in the reign of Queen Anne had defrauded another of the property by means of forged title deeds, and who when I saw him was still earth-bound to that house and land, utterly unable to break his chains until the help was given him of a medium through whom he confessed where he had hidden the true title deeds, and gave the names of those to whom of right the property should belong. By his confession from his chain to that house, but not from his imprisonment to the earth plane, he had to work there till his efforts had raised up and helped onward those whom he had driven into the ways of sin and death by his crime. And so can this spirit hope to leave the earth plane. And there he still works, striving to undo the effects of his past sin. Will anyone say his punishment was too light? At what point God's mercy shall stop and that sinner be doomed eternally? You dare to face the true me that reads or to follow out even in thought the bitter and awful consequences of a belief in eternal punishment for any of the erring children of God? Heaven, these pages sought to show what has been the true experience of one whom the churches might deem a lost soul, since I died without a belief in any church, any religion, and but a shadowy belief in a God. My own conscience ever whispered to me that there must be a supreme, a divine being, but I stifled the thought and thrust it from me, cheating myself into a sense of security and indifference akin to that of the foolish ostrich which buries its head in the sand and fancies none can see it. And in all my wanderings, although I have indeed learned that there is a divine omnipotent ruler of the universe, its upholder and sustainer, I have not learned that he can be reduced to a personality, a definite shape in the likeness of man, a something whose attributes we finite creatures can argue about and settle. Neither have I seen anything which would incline me to believe in one form of religious belief rather than in another. What I have learned is to free the mind, if possible, from the boundaries of any and every creed. The infancy of the race of planetary man, when his mental condition resembles that of a child, may be called the age of faith. The Mother Church supplies for him the comfort and hope of immortality and takes from his mind the burden of thinking out for himself a theory of first cause, which will account to him for his own existence and that of his surroundings. Faith steps in as a maternal satisfier of the longings of his imperfectly developed soul, and the man of a primitive race believes without questioning why he does so. Of savages, the more spiritualized men become the mystery men, and then the priests, and as age succeeds to age, the idea of an established church is formulated. The age of reason, when the development of man's intellectual faculties causes him to be no longer satisfied with blind faith in the unknown, the mother's milk of the churches no longer assuages his mental hunger. He requires stronger food, and if it be withheld, he breaks away from the fostering care of Mother Church, which once sustained but which now only cramps and cripples the growing and expanding soul. Man's reason demands greater freedom and its due share of nourishment, and must find it somewhere. And in the struggle between the rebellious growing child and the Mother Church, who seeks to retain still the power she wielded over the infant, the faith that once sufficed as food comes to be regarded as something nauseous and to be rejected at all cost. Hence the age of reason becomes a time of uprootal of all the cherished beliefs of the past. Then comes another stage, in which the child, now grown to be a youth who has seen and tasted for himself the joys and sorrows, the penalties and pleasures and benefits of reason, and has thereby learned to put a juster value on the powers and limitations of his own reasoning faculties, looks back at the faith he once despised, and recognizes that it also has its beauties and its value. He sees that though faith alone cannot suffice for the nourishment of the soul beyond its infant stage, yet reason alone, devoid of faith, is but a cold hard fare upon which to sustain the soul now becoming conscious of the immeasurable and boundless universe by which it is surrounded, and of the many mysteries it contains, mysteries reason alone is not able to explain. Man turns back to faith once more and seeks to unite it with reason, that henceforth they may assist each other. Now faith and reason are the central thought principles of two different spheres of thought in the spirit world. Faith is the vitalizing principle of religion or ecclesiasticism, as reason is of philosophy. Of thought which appear at first sight opposed to each other, and nonetheless capable of being blended in the mental development of the same personality, the properly balanced mind being that in which they are equally proportioned over the other to a great degree, the individual, be he mortal or disembodied spirit, will be narrow-minded in one direction or the other and incapable of taking a just view of any mental problem, and will resemble a two-wheel gig which has a big and a little wheel attached to the same axle, and in consequence neither wheel can make due progress, the mental gig coming to a stop till the defect be remedied. A man may be thoroughly conscientious in his desire for truth, but if his intellectual as well as his moral faculties have not been equally developed, his mind will be like a highway blocked by huge masses of error, so that the ethereal rays from the star of truth cannot penetrate it. They are broken and refracted by the obstructions, so that either they do not reach the man's soul at all, or they are such distorted images of the truth that they are simply a source of prejudice and error. The intellect may be called the eye of the soul, and if the sight of that eye be imperfect, the soul remains in mental darkness. However earnest may be its desire for light, the mental sight must be developed and used ere it can become clear and strong. Blind ignorant faith is no safeguard against error. The history of religious persecutions in all ages is surely proof of that. Great minds of earth to whom great intellectual discoveries are due have been those in which the moral and intellectual powers are equally balanced, and the perfect man or angel will be the man in whom all the qualities of the soul have been developed to their highest point, mental and moral, has its corresponding ray of color, and the blending of these forms the beautiful and varied tints of the rainbow, and like it they melt into one another to form the perfect whole. Some souls the development of certain faculties will take place more rapidly than that of others, in some certain seed germs of intellect and morality will lie fallow and give no sign that they exist, but they are nonetheless there, and either on earth or in the great hereafter they will begin to grow and to blossom into perfection. Lack of development of the moral attributes in certain souls and the over-development of other qualities